CliffCentral.com.
We are back on. Wait, where's the rest of the team? Gareth, Gord, are you here?
Yes, and we there are we go. On. Okay, very well. See, we rehearsed that so beautifully. Look at how we pulled it off flawlessly. I think we're so good.
That's a career highlight of mine right there.
What did we pull off? Did I do well?
You did great. You were terrific. You've just come on now, but we were all trying to time it so we'd all come on at exactly the right moment. Yes. We are dealing with a few technical imperfections this morning, but otherwise the show is going ahead. Gord is here. Sia's here. Fundo's running things in the studio. So
I resent right? being are called you, technical.
Are you all right, Gord?
Yes, I'm right. Depends what you mean. Existentially, no. Cough-wise, I'm fine, thanks.
Yeah, the cough just sounded a little bit like Qatar.
Did it sound a bit Roro-ish?
No, because that's a dry cough, apparently. Yeah.
But it is a thing if you get a cough. Like, it is the season to be snotty, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. And, like, because you got to shop, especially if you're, like, a single person that's now, like, very on your own.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, I would understand a person having a raging coughing fit's going to kind of bother people. That makes sense. But like, just like you got this little tickle in your throat and you got to clear the passageways and you like, it's like holding in a sneeze, except if you're holding a sneeze, it kind of goes away. Like you just think, can I do 20 minutes of shopping desperately wanting to cough? And then you kind of like try and do it subtly and you realize that that's why it wasn't an effective cough and you've got to now do it again. And it's like a really high pressure situation.
Apparently
in the pick and pay is like super
scary. One of the things that really disturbs me about this coronavirus is some people say the symptoms, and again, I don't know for sure because I'm not a doctor, but someone said that the symptoms include violent headaches, which sounds really shit.
That's when your head is like just bouncing around inside shit is like,
it's like there's a mongoose basically raiding the various rooms of your head. And then
we call them disabled geese these days.
And then
mong is not an acceptable fucking word. Right?
And then you also get violent diarrhea as well. So a lot of violence.
I mean, yeah, imagine your diarrhea decided to turn on you and become violent.
Some people's diarrhea does turn on them. Do you know what I saw the other day?
I've always wondered how some people poo up in public toilets. I don't want to get into poo.
Oh, no.
It's not a fun morning topic. But some people, I think to myself, like, you have achieved a spatter pattern that reaches a higher height than your actual anus. I'm imagining the height of the anus in relation to the bowl.
What do you do?
Not only have you shut up, but it's somehow your body should shield.
Okay.
Your body should act as a shield for upward fucking liquid pooing, but you've managed it.
Not to mention that gravity is not exactly on your side. So in other words, you'd have to point your anus skyward.
I just imagine a waterfall flowing up like a Dali painting.
Anyway, I got this video. It was actually pretty hilarious. But the more, I mean, you know when you can't watch something once, you have to watch it more than once? So this video arrived on a group, and it's a pretty revolting group of people. I mean, I love it because it's very funny most of the time, but occasionally there's one video that's just gross. And there was one that had me laughing out loud a number of times because I watched it more than once, of this guy is being arrested by the cops and he's really drunk and they're on the side of a road somewhere. So it's one of these policemen's body cams, obviously. And the guy's like, no, leave me alone. And the cops are like, come here, we're gonna handcuff you. And while they're trying to handcuff him, he just starts pooing, and it's just, it like plops down on the ground next to the cop. Cop is grossed.
Oh my God, what country is this in?
I don't know, Mexico or something. I mean, let's blame Mexico because
we did the first everything round. This morning.
Mexico's had a really tough rap this morning on the show, but it was hilarious because he just stands there and he's like,
hey, Holmes,
leave me alone. And then suddenly this, you hear the sound and like this enormous torrent emanates from between his legs. But he doesn't really open his legs. He sort of just pushes his knees out. Can I describe it that way? And then And then this waterfall comes out from between his legs. Gross.
People are loving the it's the feces hour with Gord, Gareth, and Sia. Today in bowel movement. But it happens occasionally in MMA, like not often, actually less often than you'd think. It's a very rare occurrence, but now with the sport being sort of 20, 30 years old, there have been enough instances that it can make a YouTube highlight reel. And the cool thing about the YouTube highlight reels is that they don't show it too explicitly. They do that thing where they like pixelate the area. So you just see a dude in like yellow pants, and then suddenly the pixels become like dark brown and there's awkwardness. But the way it's like, imagine you fighting someone. You've like got your head in their fucking crotch. It's like, this is maximum physical contact without actually beginning.
Wait, I didn't want to contribute to this, but wait, what happens? Understandably, if someone moves you like they do in MMA, I would also have a bowel movement. But what is it? Is it like someone punching you? Is it more like the fear?
It's just that you've got I don't know what is the best way to put this, but you've got ammo in the pipes. And at an inconvenient time, and then you're just giving maximum effort, maximum exertion, 100% effort in the thing that you're concentrating on, which involves like lots of flexible body contortions.
And someone is pinning you to the ground and pressing you.
Yeah, you're essentially a penne that's got a little bit of spinach and feta in the middle of it, and now someone is squeezing you and bending you and rolling you into all kinds of different shapes. But you're more al dente now, right? So you didn't realize that there was still something in the cannelloni.
What a marvelous and poetic description that was.
And this
is a part of our new feature, Feces Hour.
Yeah. Feces time. It's feces time. Feces time. But we talked about last week, like the week before last, we talked about like any day is a good day if you haven't pooed in your pants. Like no matter how badly things are going, just think, well, I didn't shit myself today. Unless you did, in which case, know that our hearts go out to you, pal.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to kind of come to grips with the fact that I may not have power for a sustained period of time because
have you checked that the power's tripped, dude? Because
yes, listen, okay, hang on.
Load shedding for hours.
No, the
washing machine tripping the power.
Yeah, you are an idiot. I mean, the first thing I do is I check to see if the neighbors have lights. If the neighbors have lights, then I know, you know, it's probably my fault and it's somewhere in my house. But it's definitely like the whole neighborhood. Plus, I just got a WhatsApp from other people who I know who are nearby, and they're also there. There's no power. So I'm just thinking now.
You're accessible to your neighbors via WhatsApp. That's rule number two, is never do that.
Well, I would have resisted it, but during lockdown, it's been kind of handy. And I've actually met some of my neighbors, and they're not such bad people. I'm not going to be their friend. I'm not going to be their best friend now. Don't worry. I'm not that stupid. But it's good to know at least their names.
Yeah.
I told you the other day, I saved my neighbors from their house burning down because their roof was on fire. I told you the story, right, Sia?
Yeah. Not just the song. I know you're going there, Gord.
The song. Please don't.
I knew it.
I would have recited the whole fucking song.
No, I didn't. I felt it was an opportunity. Yes, I felt it was probably best to do the song after I had warned them that their roof was on fire.
Ah, almost like a victory dance.
And then I could sing the song at leisure once they had got it under control. But it would have been horribly irresponsible to actually have been singing the song rather than, you know, doing my duty as a good neighbor and saying, hey, by the way, there's smoke coming out of the pitch of your roof.
See, the Bloodhound Gang were largely terrible, but they had a few great songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the Discovery Channel song.
You and me ain't nothing but mammals. Yeah, so we can do it like we do on the
Texas drought. You and me do the type of stuff that only Prince would sing about. So put your hands down my pants, and I'll bet you.
The fact that you still remember those.
I do. It's a karaoke staple of mine. It's a karaoke go-to.
That's great. That's a good karaoke song. Shit, man, I would love to go karaoke for so. I haven't done that in years.
Dude, I'll karaoke with you. But you're one of those people that can sing a bit. So you get up there to clear the pipes and have a little. I go up there for pure comedic value. Mm. I totally bypass zero singing ability by, you know, being able to make it funny. I inject toilet humor. I got banned from the karaoke at the Colony Arms. Because the old dude that ran the karaoke. And I mean, meanwhile, this is like a bar.
Got banned.
Well, I got banned from karaoke because I would always sing anything for love, and there'd just be a swear word in every line. I fucking won't do that. And then there's obviously Total Eclipse of the Heart. A fucking eclipse of the heart. I sing the whole thing.
And he wanted you to take it very seriously.
Now and then I get a little bit restless when I see the fucking look in your eye.
Well, yeah, that is a problem.
He kept making us promise not to. And then we get like to the last verse of the song. And then me and my two or three friends, including my mate, Buffalo Dave, we had a man band called the Great Migratory. We sang once a week karaoke and got hammered. And we had a man band called the Great Southern Migratory Water Buffalo Herd Band. And it was me and like four of my friends, and we'd get up and terribly sing. But the thing about karaoke is that the crowd responds to how much fun you're having. You can have the worst singer in the fucking world, but if they look like they're having the best time, everyone will like sing along. But you can be a great singer and look like you're awkwardly, nervously auditioning for Idols, and it makes the whole jaw awkward. So that's the secret to karaoke. Look like you're enjoying it. Ideally, do really enjoy it, and then no one cares if you suck.
I don't know if I want to take lessons about the secret of karaoke from the person who was banned from karaoke.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have to be some kind of foul miscreant to be banned from the Colony Arms karaoke. I mean,
come on now.
One slated to take over the mantle of South Africa's uncle from legendary iconic movie reviewer Barry Ronger. Gord Law's life took a turn, and he became the bad boy.
The miscreant of the Colony Arms.
The bad boy of karaoke.
What a rebel.
One night, Barry went to see you secretly. He was in incognito, and he watched you sing, and he thought, I can't hand over the reins to this person. He's a disaster.
Yeah. But, I mean, let's talk for a moment about the power of karaoke to change lives. Arnel Pineda had lots of drug problems and he was homeless and stuff, but he was like I think the Philippines, I stand to be corrected on that, but he was like the world champion karaoke singer because it's big there and they do it competitively. And he was the front man of a Journey cover band that Journey wrote of on the internet.
Yeah.
And he became the singer of, and I mean, it's Steve Perry's the original guy. Like, you can't replace a voice like that. But I mean, if you're going to replace a vocalist, Arnel Pineda. So I was never into Journey. Then I accidentally had to watch an Arnel Pineda's first like big live performance DVD. And now I've like got a lot of love for Journey. But when people say they like Journey, I'm like, but Arnel Pineda Journey. Like, it's like liking Dio Black Sabbath. You're one of those fringe people.
Look, I think you must be a person without a heart if this doesn't move you. But I watched one of his first couple of performances with Journey, the band, and when he sang Don't Stop Believing, like the dude was tearing up, and you could see that that's the whole life story of really admiring Journey and, you know, always wanting to pursue his dreams and then finally made it. Come on, just YouTube that if
and
you're having a bad day.
Why does Steve actually know the backstory of a rock artist? Because it was on Oprah.
Oh!
Of course. It's unfortunate that Sia and I can't have conversations about AC/DC because, of course, Bon Scott choking his vomit wasn't suitable material for Oprah Winfrey.
But that was early days AC/DC.
Yeah, he was the first guy, Bon Scott. And yeah, he choked to death on his vomit.
It's been BCDC since he left.
Yeah, that's correct.
Look, wait. You were mentioning being a bad boy of karaoke. Look, we didn't really discuss the story much, but can I just bring it up? This is like a bad boy in our midst here. This Tsepang Pohole guy from Gauteng, who accidentally received nearly 6 million rands in COVID relief funds.
I wish I could accidentally or even intentionally. Oh, fuck, it's COVID relief funds. Now you just put a downer on the whole story.
No, well, it was distributed by the UIF. And this was meant to help out 140-odd workers. And it got into his account. And he was like, jackpot, I'm now a multimillionaire. And he's been sharing the money with his friends and family. But I'm surprised that he's still out and about. Like, the UIF is still doing investigations, inverted commas, around this. But based on the information we have on him, I'm surprised there is a need for investigation. Like, come on, just get the money back or put the dude in jail.
Did the even people at least get their money?
Oh, shut up. No, but you know, what is it with these people who, when they, I don't understand these people who get like suspicious money in their account and they go, oh, well, that's definitely mine. Mm. And they go and they spend it and they pass it around. Do they honestly think that there is no consequence?
We can't go on spending the suspicious loot. The suspicious loot.
Like this,
we don't know where it came from. The suspicious loot.
God, we've reached our second cast this morning.
Spending the suspicious loot.
Shut up, God, you moron.
They'll never catch us for spending the suspicious loot.
Like, we know so much detail about Sefang Phohole right now. So he is 25 years old. He lives in Pretoria, and he worked as a warehouse worker. And back in May, this was his exact bank balance on the 14th of May. It was 12 rands and 46 cents.
Okay.
Lo and behold, the next time.
To make 13 rap songs.
Okay, no. Cool. Then the next time he went to check his balance, he had 5,688,814 rand and 66 cents. So he thought, yep, this is it. Time to live my best life. And so he started sending the cash around. He transferred 1 million rands to his father. He transferred 980,000 rands to his sister. He transferred 2.3 million rands to his brother-in-law. And he transferred 1.25 million rand to his girlfriend.
Jesus.
At least you know where his priorities are.
Well, look, I would have skipped the country, to be honest.
So how much did he give his pops?
His father got 1 million rand.
And his sister got 980. So he kept away 20 just to make it not a million. Because, like, hey, I love you begrudgingly. His lady got how much?
1.25 million.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So his priorities are surviving to adulthood, but below the D. Like, you gave me life, and you give me something else. That's worth
at least 300,000 more. That's spectacular. I mean, at least he's a nice human being who shared the money out. But now, obviously, each of them is going to go and spend the money. Now, he's basically created a chain of massive unhappiness.
It sounds like he gave it all away, and that's the sign of someone who knows they shouldn't be keeping it, but got to do something with it. Like, if he kept an equal share for himself, it sounds to me like all of those numbers probably add up to about what he stole, yeah?
Now, wait, Gareth, you touched on something that has also made me feel conflicted. I'm like, this is a shitty... I'm slightly conflicted as well, because it's like a shitty circumstance, but he also was sort of doing some nice with it, I guess. He spent 25,000 rands on tombstones for a late aunt and grandmother.
Jeez, he must have disliked them. Like, get the undertaker all the way to South Africa to put the tombstone on his granny.
Hang on. How much did he spend on tombstones?
25,200.
Yes. Tombstone people for free.
And then he was also, some of the remainder he was sending to various accounts that he has in his name. But so far, yeah, there still is this investigation that's underway, and all the, what's the official term, who's doing the investigation? The Asset Forfeit Unit, AFU, says that they've been trying to call him, but he is not answering their phone calls.
That's not an acronym. That's not an acronym. They're actually called AFU.
Yes. he also bought fridges for the house, and he was doing kitchen renovations as well.
So basically, he bought nice things for himself and people. When 5 bar arrives in your account, the first thing to do is think, this isn't an everyday occurrence. I should stop and think here. Someone's going to come asking for this money.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I don't think it's a question of of levels of education or any of that bullshit. I think if money arrives in your account that isn't yours, don't, for God's sake, don't
you
spend
gotta
it.
You've got to know, like, people are able to transfer money. They can get the wrong destination.
You know,
they could if they can put it in there by mistake, they can take it out by mistake.
What you got to do is buy something like silver and gold, right? And then bury it somewhere where no one can find it. And then find some way to say, okay, like, legal culpability is non-criminal or something. So you get declared bankrupt and they forfeit your stuff and you get some sort of like suspended criminal record. The key is lose the money, take consequences for losing the money, but don't go to jail. And then 10 years later, just dig up a bar a month and live on that.
Oh,
God, you've thought about this a little bit too much.
Thought about it now. I'm snappy as fuck.
Okay.
Considering it's still the middle of the night, I'm quite impressed with myself.
I'm just surprised that, look, we know his name, we know his family members' names, and still nothing is being done about this. So, look, if you know Tsepang Pohole from Pretoria, if you're the neighbor, just be nice to him now, because he has some cash. Man. Look, even the Sunday Times so politely said that, oh, no, well, we scheduled an interview with members of the family, but Dumeleng, the sister, had sudden illness, so we had to cancel it. The dude and his family are multimillionaires. Of course they don't want to talk about it further.
But I mean, a thing that would be different in the UK with something like this is that you would have like a tabloid / book deal career. If you were the dude that even if you...
Yeah, correct. Yeah,
you could be like, how I blew 5 million that came from nowhere. And then have you heard that? We did a story on an FHM many years ago, the Lotto Lout, that like a typical football hooligan looking... English lad, like overweight guy, shaved head. He won something ridiculous, like £100 million or something in the lotto, and he spectacularly fucked his life up with it. Like you couldn't imagine. He built a giant sort of flat racetrack racing pan that he would get Lamborghinis and supercars with his friends, and they'd play bumper cars. So the person whose car was working last won, like a demolition derby of super.
Right.
Like he once bought something like a Ferrari or a Lamborghini and then went jawling and parked it and then forgot where it was and never found it again.
There are innumerable pieces of research that have been conducted on these lotto winners. And invariably, people who make bad life decisions before they have money end up making even worse life decisions after they have money. In other words, if you are a profligate loser and you just do everything you do in your life is destructive and stupid and not particularly positive or useful to the rest of humanity, then the worst thing we can do is give you a big pile of money.
Oh, best thing you can do.
It magnifies your destructiveness and your stupidity. If you're a responsible person and you work hard and you look after your kids and you make sure that your duties are taken care of every day and all the right things, those people, if you give them money, end up obviously having more success and more happiness and more discipline, more kind of positive results in their life. But they are in the minority. And that's why a lot of people who say, well, if we just help people, if we just gave them a bunch of money, if we could just print money and just hand it to people, their lives would invariably improve. It is not so.
No, it's not that simple. But then, you know, look at the story from the other side. I think this is going to piss so many people off who have been getting salary cuts or have been laid off and they're trying to reach out to the UIF. And look at what has happened with close to 6 million rands.
But look, they're going to get it back from this guy. They'll obviously get back at least some of it, the stuff he hasn't spent on kitchen appliances and such nonsense.
But remember... Remember that university student? How long was that investigation? How long did it take?
Yeah, I know, but they eventually got the money back. I mean, you don't get to keep stuff that isn't yours. This is like a fundamental. When your parents are teaching you something at 3, 4 years old, you should know already, that's not mine, I can't have it. And if you believe that there's such a thing as a free lunch, you are just going to spend your whole life being miserable because there isn't. And no one's going to bring it to you. Like, life is full of challenges. And although it's a lot better now than it's ever been in history, people who think they get something for nothing are just morons.
Cool story, bro, but I want that easy lotto money.
Yeah, you see?
Because you see, it'll make me a better person because I won't have the angst and anxiety that comes with financial concern. So I'll become very zen and peaceful. And as a result, I'll stop being a dickhead. Because you were saying if you were a dickhead before, you'll be a dickhead after. Not me. Moneyfall will solve all my problems.
You think?
I'll be like getting lipo and stem cell research, stem cell injections on the same day.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I want to get transferred into the body of a young able body.
You'd build a supercar demolition derby.
I would pay a family with financial troubles from like an underprivileged community for their healthy, beautiful, strapping son with a perfect body and a giant penis. And then I'd get the scientists of the rest of the Illuminati to transfer my consciousness into him. And then I'd put this like young man in the prime of his life, I'd put him into my dying fat body, and then I would be immortal.
You know what? I know what you were like when you were carefree. When you were Captain Beer for FHM and you and I would drink together. You were a disaster zone.
Dude, I'm the same now. I just don't drink as much.
That's exactly right. And if you had money, you would drink as much.
Oh, I've got money for drinking now, even in time of famine. I just don't particularly like to because, like you say, I have two speeds, sleep and maximum. There's just two buttons on this old school console. I'm not like the SpaceX Crew Dragon. I'm like one of those old school ships.
Yeah.
Big square buttons that like shiny.
Are you on or sleep right now?
I'm trying to shift from sleep to on because, you know, we do this at night.
So, Gord, if we didn't wake you up this morning to do the show, what time do you usually wake up?
It depends on what's happening with my work. Like just because of the way I am as a person, but also the nature of the projects that come to me. Sometimes they're like, hey, we need a thing, but it's now, as of right now, you're dealing with the most urgent situation of your life where 10 minutes ago all was good. So I sometimes find myself needing to turn around large volumes of work. Like I do work all night quite often. So then I might sleep well into the day. But I try and, if that's been the case, I try and sort of reset it as quickly as possible. And the early morning helps me with that because if I've been working late and then getting up late for a couple of days and getting into that cycle, being forced to get up in the middle of the fucking night, and then I kind of carry on with my day, it kind of resets my sleep cycle. So it's pretty useful. But generally speaking, yeah, kind of mid-morning. If I don't have traffic to go sit in.
Who's got the birds chirping in the background?
No, not me.
Might be Yanez. Yanez has just joined us. Hey, Yanez, how's it, dude?
I'm gonna move inside.
You just decided to go do your interview outside on this crisp.
Yeah, it's nice crisp. I got a nice cup of coffee in my hand. And birds are chirping. It's beautiful.
Are you sitting with Wim Hof doing breathing exercises, naked and cross-legged, naked and cross-legged in the pool?
Yanez Vermeeren is with us. Yanez is, of course, famous from television, but we've also known that he's been in the studio a couple of times to talk about all his TV projects since then, and he's been behind the scenes, got a production company that he ran very successfully, and he's been busy with something new, which he told me about a couple of months ago, and I wanted to introduce you to it because I think it's really a good idea. It's called Filmer. It's a new online platform that connects film and video content creators with organizations and brands that are looking for innovative ways to reach their target audience through digital and broadcast video content. So, you know what? Yanez is no idiot. He decided, well, I don't just want to run a platform that aggregates these people. I actually want to own that platform, and I want to create a space where people who are content creators, and these days there are a lot of people who make, you know, funny TikTok videos, people who do makeup tutorials, God knows what else. But these people are in high demand. From the brand point of view, because they want authentic ambassadors to basically tell stories for them. And Yanez is smart enough to be able to figure out how to build this. Now, technically, there must have been quite a lot that went on under the covers. I mean, this is not something that's easy for anyone to build, right, Yanez?
No, I mean, we've been in the process for probably about a year now building it and obviously testing it and making sure that the workflow is smooth and that there's no bugs in the system. And
you had to learn about complex things like APIs and that kind of shit, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, stuff I'd never heard of before. But, right, so, but the cool, Yeah.
So explain to us, like, imagine I'm a content creator. I mean, imagine here I'm making a podcast. So how do I get on your platform? What does your platform do for me? And if I'm a brand from the other side, how do I manage to get the best out of this?
Yeah, so I think the easiest way to describe it is, I mean, what we're trying to do is we're trying to democratize the whole industry, and we're trying to level the playing field by connecting brands and clients and agencies to, for the first time, directly to an entire hungry community of content creators. And when I say content creators, I mean directors, producers, animators, editors, storytellers, you know, you name it, across the board. As long as it's video content, we are connecting all of those very talented people directly to brands. And what that does for a brand, and I mean, you'd be silly for a brand not to believe in it, because you're essentially getting the best ideas coming straight back to you. And not only the best ideas, but you're also getting ideas, and I think in the South African context, this is very important, is ideas that are locally relevant and speak directly to your target audience. Now, in the traditional model, which is often kind of political, or it's about who you know and friends and deals get done, there's a small group of people that control most of the content creation. This opens up the entire industry, and it just makes it a lot more fair, but also for brands, you're getting the best ideas, you're getting the best treatments, and you know that the people that for once that are creating your content actually understand exactly what the cultural tastes and the nuances and the styles are of the audience that you're trying to target.
Now, there are a number of things here. First of all, when you say content creators are hungry, you're absolutely right, because some of them have no money at
I
all
was
since
just about to say, can I also
COVID.
say, or do you have to be hungry?
Okay. Second of all,
Platform for hungry content creators. Fuck.
Gord Laws, this is a perfect opportunity for you to make your Mexico song and to try and market it to the Mexican embassy. They'll love it. Exactly.
Don't know. Don't go to Mexico. Is
That's the
gonna
one.
they're gonna fund
I think they might. And then the third thing, Yanez, is that the real brains of the business is Perry van Papendorp, who's your
Correct.
business partners. I mean, you're just the front man, really, as usual.
100%.
So Perry, why don't you tell us what the fuck Yanez was talking about? Because he was making it up clearly.
I've got to be honest. It's been hugely beneficial having a hunk as the face of the platform. We've gotten a hell of a lot of PR out of it. That's for
Yeah.
sure.
But he's really expensive. He's expensive window dressing, isn't
That's
he?
exactly why Gary down. The only reason I have to
So Yanez's celebrity runs deep, and that's really helped the PR. But thankfully, Yanez also knows what he's talking about. And you know, we both come from that content creation space, and I think that the reason we built this was because we had seen just how many talented filmmakers are out there who aren't really landing in front of agencies or landing in front of brands. They're just like not part of the kind of traditional model, and we know these creators are doing hot work, and we also know that the brands out there want to connect with these creators. They are looking for new kind of approaches to the way that they go about creating their video content, and especially now. I mean, it's kind of fortuitous that we are launching post-COVID, because a lot of these marketing teams, they have to do things differently. They've been mandated to do things differently. They want to be working with a larger pool of talent, and also want to create their content more affordably, and more efficiently. And as Yanez said, they want it to be locally relevant. And I think those are kind of the three things that this platform really is about, is being able to create more content more often because it's more affordable, being able to reach out there and access this whole market of creators who can be more locally relevant in their treatments and their views on your job. And then also just being able to be more efficient, because video content leads along. It's kind of slow, and brands and clients get frustrated by that.
So you spell it Filmer, Filmer, dot TV, and that's the website as well, Filmer.tv, Filmer. If you need to spell that more than three times, you may realize that that's not actually how Filmer is spelled, but it's clever because it'll stick in your head.
Just don't say it three times
Filmer.
out loud in front of a mirror, otherwise it will film you in your bathroom.
So guys, how do people make money out of this? Because the obvious thing is that you have this perfect synthesis of someone with a great video content idea, who's a content creator. Maybe they work from home, or they film stuff with a drone, or whatever it might be. And then you've got a brand who's really looking for exactly the content they produce. And you can just make a perfect shidduch, a perfect marriage between these two. And then everybody makes money. But obviously, there are a lot more complications that come into this. How are you going to deal with smoothing out the process from a back-end point of view? I mean, how do you make it really easy for these people to connect?
Well, Gareth, just to sort of step back for a moment. So the way the platform works is that it's not just about people kind of having ideas and launching their ideas out into the world. It's more about a brand having a need. So they'll have a brief that they upload, and then creators can then choose to pitch on that brief. So they'll put forward what we call a treatment, which is really like a visual document of how they're going to go about doing that production. Okay. And in terms of how they're going to run for the money and so on. So what the platform allows you to do is briefs get launched, and instead of just sort of two or three production companies being invited by the brand or the agency to pitch on it, the entire community can pitch on it. So that's kind of the first step of it. And then once those treatments have gone in, the brand will go through the treatments and then choose their creator, and then off they go and they start the production. And we're kind of in the background making sure that the production is running on time and everything's happening and the milestones are being met. So basically that's essentially how the platform works. And the way that we make money is that we take a commission on the production budget from the brand. So it's completely free for anyone to use the platform, anyone to be on the platform. But when a brand uploads a brief, they upload a production budget, then we take a commission. And then for the creators, whatever production budget is uploaded, that's what they receive for the job. And then it's up to them how they choose to use that production budget for the job. So what do they pay themselves in fees? What do they pay their talent? What do they allocate to locations and location scouts and crew and gear, et cetera?
Well,
I just wanted to interject there, Gareth, because what's also important from a brand perspective is, and why would brands go for this, is that the type of filmmakers that we have on the platform aren't always the traditional ones. I mean, we've got across the board, you know, big production companies, directors, but we've also got the newbies that have just come out of film school, the guys that are self-taught. And what that gives you is it gives you access to kind of the new age content producers. And we all know that content isn't about the big million rand budgets anymore. I mean, a guy with one little DSLR camera can compete with a guy that's producing a commercial for 1 million rand simply because the cost of technology's come down.
Aren't they already doing that? I mean, you see people producing stuff that's really, really entertaining or really well put together, but it's cheap as hell. And you don't need the four cameras in the studio like you guys used to have to put together for TV productions.
Exactly. That's archaic these days. But also, like, these guys, these young creators have come up through a network of friends and people that they've worked with over the years, so they don't have to tap into third parties. And, you know, like with big production companies, they're tapping into like casting agents and crewing agents and location scouts and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
These guys are a lot more nimble. They can do it by themselves and they can execute production for a fraction of what it would normally cost and bring value to the brand and the client at the end of the day.
Now, it sounds brilliant, guys. So what's the launch? How can we get involved? Do we have to go and register? Do we have to wait for a brief to come up? How does it all happen?
Yeah, so I mean, it's been a bit of a soft launch. So we launched like a week ago.
Everything under coronavirus lockdown has been a soft launch. Yeah, I don't know anybody already. Is going hard during this time.
no one's going hard.
Jesus, yeah. Oh my God.
But
there's hard presentations right now, that's for sure. They're all very, very muted and soft, and no one gets to see each other half the time.
We've done about 100 hours of these video conference calls just to clients, so that's also shown us that there's a new way of doing business. I mean, you don't have to jump in your car and go meet a client at their office anymore. You can actually get business done just via your laptop.
I know.
That's great about the platform.
It's great, but then you have people like Sia who refuse to turn on their camera because they feel that they might not be looking beautiful enough today.
Hey.
Were his eyes a bit puffy this morning?
Thank you for understanding, Perry.
He didn't moisturize this morning. He's still going to do that later.
I still need to panel beat my face ready after this.
I just realized it's from way earlier, but Sia sends a very polite message excusing himself for turning his camera off. Like, how dare you, Sia? It's the only reason I tune in to this goddamn show. To look at your beautiful face. Then I realized that was sent at 6.
All right, so basically you guys have done a soft launch, and now anybody can go on, you register?
Yeah, you register, you fill in a couple of boxes. It's all very user-friendly. It's going to take you 10 minutes. As a brand, you can register. As a creative, you can register. And then you're basically A for away, you know. We're going live with three briefs this week still. So the work's starting to flow, and we're hoping that within the next 3 to 6 months, we're going to have regular work for all of these kind of creators out there. And hopefully, you know what I really, what I'd be proud of is if in like 6 months' time, we actually discover kind of talent that we would usually never have had access to. You know, and connect brands to new talent instead of the old same boring suppliers that they keep on going to over and over again, you know. And people are creatures of habit, but I'm hoping that our platform will change things up a bit, because essentially, I mean, producing commercials and content is a competitive world, and if you're doing a bad job of it, you're not going to sell your product, you know. So you want the best ideas to come to you, and I'm hoping that people will see this.
Well, I'm sure they will, and you guys certainly have got the experience to pull it off. So Perry and Yanez, well done. Filmer is what it's called, F-Y-L-M-E-R. And you can go and find out more by going to filmer.tv if you're a content creator. And for all you know, you could end up with a couple of briefs. Gord, might be something that we can do with that Mexico song of yours. Otherwise, we'll have to put our heads together and come up with something better.
Yeah.
Well, also, Gareth, I don't know if you remember this, but we shot together, and actually it was one of the first commercials, I think, that kind of launched Clip Central. Do you remember this?
Dude, I remember that, the one we did with WeChat.
Exactly. Oh. Yeah.
You're a genius. You're a really smart dude. You managed to make me look like a human being on camera. I mean, that was an achievement. Jesus, if you can do that, you can do anything.
Yeah, you were a hell of a performer, Gareth. And you know what? I expected you to be a prima donna, and you were not. You were an absolutely cordial, lovely guy to work with.
Well, thank God for that.
Jeez, he must have had
one of those days. Yeah,
one of those days.
All right. Yeah, fuck you, Yanez and Gord.
Love you, Gareth.
Anyway, so there you go. So maybe we should talk about doing the next round of brand commercials for Clip Central.
Yeah, and I've just started a new TV show last 3 weeks ago. Just give me a break. It's enough. It's one thing at a time. I can't do so much.
Put all your promos through Filmer. We'll do it. Zero commission for you.
Irons in the fire.
Also, it would be Gareth making an ad for Gareth. Like, hi, I'm Gareth Cliff. You know me from being Gareth Cliff. And Cliff Central, where I'm Gareth Cliff every day.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Oh, my God. Thanks, Yanez. Thanks, Perry. Very good.
Are you going to kick us off now?
Yes, get
off. We're gone. Okay.
You're done.
I thought we were just getting started. Thanks, Gareth. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a happy day. Very good work. That's a clever platform. I think it's gonna do quite well. People need a place to be able to sell their wares, especially if they are creative. And this is probably a good place to do it. So get on there, awesome. Filmer.tv.
Digital.
So Gordo, what's on your agenda today if you don't have any work to do? I'm curious about how the life of Gord works when there's a free day.
I do actually have some work to do today, so that's nice. And
you won't just be hunting rabbits.
Yeah, I just basically
What do you do?
I zen out. And then I tap into a multiverse of potential outcomes as to how things are going to go. And like Doctor Strange in the Avengers, I live each one of those catastrophic outcomes over and over again.
What?
And then I just breathe out.
Jesus, that sounds horrible.
We are but complex chemical reactions on a piece of space rock, and that everything we do is futile anyway, and happiness is just a chemical subjective experience.
So in other words, you smoke weed. I mean, it sounds.
I certainly do a bit of that. But no, I mean, look, it's nice and it's also repetitive. I don't know how else to describe it. Like,
how are children's books coming along?
They're coming on nicely. I've got two that are written, and I'm busy doing final layouts on the one. It's gotten to a point now where there's a little bit of like waiting on other people, which can be quite frustrating. I've got illustrating the one book.
The reason I'm asking is I have an angle. I mean, I wrote a children's story, but it's really, really scary and revolting.
Okay.
And I wondered if I could submit it to you, and you might want to include it as an addendum in your book.
Yeah. We'll talk. I'm not even joking though. Like, there are a couple of people who's, I'm not trying to make a publishing company where it's like open submissions and you kind of seeking people to publish, but there are a couple of people who've got ideas.
Mine is more like a really, really revolting description of a person.
I don't know if I'm taking Gareth seriously or not right now.
No, I've already written it. I'm deadly serious.
Oh.
And when I was a kid, my favorite thing to read was Roald Dahl.
Loved it.
And Dr. what I liked about Roald Dahl is he would write these incredibly gross descriptions of people like Mrs. Twit or George's granny and George's Marvelous Medicine or...
Bogus and Bunsen Bean, one fat, one short, one lean.
Horrible crooks, so different in looks, when none of them is equally mean.
Yeah. Yes, I remember that shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, well, that was a nice trip down memory lane. Okay, let's wrap up the show for this morning. Thank you, Gord.
Can you please at least watch our show today? That's something that you can do.
Yes, Gord.
Watch, the one on the telly.
the one on
the broadcast. You see, I don't have access to broadcast. You must know how I've isolated myself from the stream of consciousness. Like, I check in occasionally on, like, if there have been major law updates, but
you have no excuse. I'm deliberately
avoiding news, current events, people's opinions on Facebook. I just live in this little house, and it's the whole world. You know Westworld? I think my home, I'm like the early experiment. I don't know how far you're into that, but like I'm like that black dude that like is the early experiment just living in this like little West world of one that I think is real.
Well, it could all be fake. You don't know. You haven't been out of your house once. So.
Yeah, I don't know if they're still refreshing the background or if you like walk outside and it's say loading and you're going to see like the resolution on the environment improve.
Okay, everybody.
Don't
miss our show. So what now? It's on ENCA tonight, live at 8:30. We have an amazing panel of guests. Reedy Tlabi, who obviously she and I had that really interesting interaction on the Big Debate Show not so long ago, and we decided it would be a good idea to return the compliment and get Reedy on my show. So she joins us. Also, Kaya Sitole, who's well known to our CliffCentral.com audience because he's been on the Burning Platform a number of times. He's terrific, always has very sensible points of view, and does not hold back on matters like SAA. And then also on the panel, Jeremy Mansfield, who many people have been following the career of Jeremy Mansfield over the years in radio and television, and he is a legendary broadcaster. He's also part of our panel. And then our special guest is someone who I've often spoken to, Gad Saad. He's a professor at the University of Concordia in Canada, also the author of a book which is about parasitic minds and how we're taking up bad ideas and they're beating the hell out of common sense.
We can go on together with parasitic minds.
Oh, here we go.
We're beating the sense out of one another.
You know, this morning has not been a podcast. It's been a musical.
Today's been a musical. That's exactly right.
I've started singing my entire life. I mean, this has become the result of the fact that 90% of my face-to-face conversation in the last 4 months.
This is also because you have been banned from singing karaoke at the Colony Arms.
Exactly that.
I got to quickly.
If only they'd let you carry on singing there, you wouldn't be singing to us every morning.
I got to quickly end with one of my finest moments. So the old dude was like this. He took himself very seriously. He looked like a Ned Flanders, but bald. Type of oak that would like run the Sunday school rugby team or something in a PE community, and like he was not impressed by the swearing, and he took me aside a couple of times, and I'm like, this isn't over 21s only bar. I'm like in my late 20s, like, dude, I'm swearing over the karaoke, who cares? But I got a few stern talking to's, and then what I would do was I'd keep it tidy the whole night and then do this right at the end. So I got banned, and I tried to go back, and there was no coming back. But then my friend Althea, she's his niece. And so, like, I asked her to put in a good word for me and, like, convince him that for my 28th birthday, it would be fine. And so I saved my dirtiest song right for the end. And halfway through that song, I erupted into profanity, the likes of which has never been heard. And I got myself thunder banned forever. Like, I don't think I'm even allowed in there.
Shame on you. Fantastic.
But I won because I got him.
No.
All right, listen, Gordo, thank you very much for a lovely morning.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry that we weren't able to see each other face-to-face or that my technical challenges this morning were an impediment to our enjoyment of the show. But otherwise, we will see you next Wednesday. Have an excellent time. And we will see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock, bright and early. Hopefully, I've got power at my house.
He's got the power. Okay, bye, guys. CliffCentral.com